Live from the heartland and the crossroads of America, it's Tony Katz today.
The biggest story in America is the southern border. Now, it could be said differently that the biggest story in America is immigration. Immigration, not illegal immigration, immigration. But that wouldn't be true either. Because the biggest story in America is illegal immigration. And the biggest story in America is the southern border. Immigration is a different conversation altogether. This confounds the political left. Because they want you to believe that everything is an immigration conversation. And when you bring up any aspect that you have issue with, that's because you hate immigrants. Which, of course, is not the case by any stretch. Illegal immigration is wrong, and these people are not undocumented. They are here illegally. They have broken the law. Instead of thinking of them as people who have come across the border without documentation, maybe it would help the political left if you thought of them as people who entered the Capitol on January 6th. Now, see, do you get it now? Do you see? That's how we view it. How you view people on January 6th, that's how the rest of the country views the southern border. Except the difference is the southern border is a much bigger problem and more people are dying. Not just Ashley Babbitt. Tony Katz. Tony Katz today. What's going on, kitten? 833-468-8669. 833-GOT-TONY. Enough fentanyl to kill 270 million Americans? Still, nothing gets done. The border is the biggest story in America. But the conversation about the border does lead to a conversation regarding immigration as a whole. And as Governor Ron DeSantis was discussing on Fox and Friends this morning regarding dealing with Haiti, that they're trying to get Americans out of Haiti into the country. He's trying to help Floridians get home. The conversation went like this.
She said no one wants to pick her up or give her a ride because it's so dangerous in Port-au-Prince where she is. So she's worried that her mom's not going to be able to safely get out of that area to get on one of these flights.
Well, some of the people that have already been rescued, that has been people that we have had on the ground in Port-au-Prince that have helped navigate around that. So it's not an easy situation. Mm-hmm. You're right. It's not as simple as just calling a cab and getting to the airport and then all of a sudden you go home. So those are challenges that we're going to work through, but we're committed to doing it. I think we've got good mm-hmm. assets at our disposal. I will say this, though, and, we're vetting people because mm-hmm. we're not just going to bring people if we don't know who they are. So sure. We're making sure they're Floridians, U.S. citizens, or have a right to come, whatever. It has been like pulling teeth to deal with some of these federal agencies. And the reality is you have an easier time getting into this country illegally than you do just to be rescued as a United States citizen. How the hell does that make any sense?
It makes no sense whatsoever. We understand it. Governor DeSantis, by the way, we could have had DeSantis. This is the conversation. And this is going to dominate 2024, whether the nominee is Biden or not. And my bet is not. The southern border, immigration, is going to dominate the conversation. It is going to be the thing that gets discussed on the regular. One can always assume that there's going to be a conversation about the economy. But one does not quite know how to react to conversations like this one on CNN.
And this is one of the trend lines that I think really tells the story that's the difference between this election and the 2020 election. So if you ask voters, who do you think would do a better job handling border security and immigration, what do we see? We see that back in 2020, it was basically a dead even split, right? Joe Biden was slightly favored on it, but not overwhelmingly. And of course, he slightly won the election, not overwhelmingly so. Look at where we are today in a Marquette University Law School poll that was put out last month. Look at that advantage that that Donald Trump has on immigration and border security. It's near 30 points. This is a tremendous change that's going on. And it's no wonder that Donald Trump is running on immigration. And he's not just running on it in a Republican primary. He's running on in the general election. And I also think that's why there hasn't been quite the backlash that you might expect over Trump's comments, some of which that I, of course, wouldn't make. And it's because that voters at this particular point are quite concerned about immigration and they trust Donald Trump on this particular issue.
Now, this is a fascinating back and forth because something happened here on CNN that doesn't happen. The guy you hear speaking is a guy by the name of Harry Enten, E-N-T-E-N. First, this bit of polling that he is discussing, this is a poll from Marquette University Law School and CNBC. And it shows that in the 2020 election, Americans favored Biden over Trump on immigration issues by a point. 1 point, uno, singular point. In 2024, they favor Trump over Biden by 28 points on border security and immigration. 28 points. Now, for those of you playing the home game, you got to think about this politically. That's actually a 29-point swing. Plus 1 to minus 28 is the other way to look at it, is plus 29 for Trump. That is clear. That, of course, this is going to be a subject going into the general election, which is why the political left has been so aggressive over the past month, saying we have to get this done and Republicans are being intransigent and blah, 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 blah. That isn't the part of the conversation I want you to pay attention to. The part of the conversation that I think matters is when Harry Enten gets into the conversation of what it is Trump has been saying. Listen to that again.
That Joe Biden has on, that Donald Trump has on immigration and border security. It's near 30 points. This is a tremendous change that's going on. And it's no wonder that Donald Trump is running on immigration. And he's not just running on it in a Republican primary. He's running on in the general election. And I also think that's why there hasn't been quite the backlash that you might expect over Trump's comments, some of which that I, of course, wouldn't make. And it's because that voters at this particular point are quite concerned about immigration and they trust Donald Trump on this particular issue.
Now, Joe Biden and the team have been very, very focused about talking about Trump and talking about his comments. This is Joe Biden in Phoenix basically begging for votes.
This election is not a referendum on me. It's an election between me and a guy named Trump. And this is a guy who whose way he talks about the Latino community is, in 2016, he called Latinos criminal, drug dealers, and rapists when he came down to an escalator. Now he says immigrants are poisoning the blood of our country. You're the reason why, in large part, I beat Donald Trump. I need you. I need you badly.
Yes, he's begging for votes, which you're running for office. That's what you'll do. Yeah, I think they're going to replace him, but he's still going to do his job and beg for votes. They keep saying this about Trump, poisoning the blood and calling you rapist, this, that, and the other. Yet it's not having any effect. The reason it's not having any effect goes back to this conversation very honestly had about Harry Enten, or had by Harry Enten about the subject. The border is the biggest story in America. The border is completely dangerous. You have human trafficking. You have sex trafficking. You have fentanyl that can kill 270 million Americans. And you have these cartels acting with impunity. We're told to just suck it up and take it. And the Biden administration doesn't do anything. And you know what people on the bar stool, people around the kitchen table are saying? Holy crap, we have to do something about this. And when they say that out loud, they get the MSNBC set saying, oh, you're just afraid of brown people. If they're trying to kill me and bring me fentanyl, then yes. If white people are trying to kill me and bring me fentanyl and force fentanyl on me, then yes. As the great Garry Aminoff once explained, if 10,000 Swedes were massing across the Mexican border into Texas, we should be equally concerned. Good God. Harry Enten's conversation about immigration is exactly why people are attracted to Trump, because he is having the conversation that you're having at the kitchen table, you're having at the water cooler, you're having on the bar stool, wherever you may be. He's connected to you, and Joe Biden is in a no man's land, ridiculous world of saying bigotry this and bigotry that and bigotry the other. No one cares, Boo Bear. Don't you get it, Joe Biden? No one cares what Joy Reid thinks about the subject. People are dying and children are being raped. Maybe it has to stop. Maybe we can't live like this. Maybe this has to be subject number one. Enten's conversation on CNN is so honest, and I'm really convinced that the vast majority of people totally missed it. They missed it completely. They didn't hear it. Or maybe they heard it and they were very thankful that it got shoved under the rug and they can move past it. No. We're not moving past it. Every single Republican running for any office anywhere should be talking about the border. The border to the right, make it akin to what the left has made abortion. You will not have a conversation, a speech, where you do not discuss the border. Biden knows he's behind the eight ball. Progressives know that they're behind the eight ball. And CNN just let you know that this is where people are at. This is the conversation. Now, as for Haiti, because I have been asked, do I think that we're going to see a lot of Haitian refugees? And my answer is I think we'll see some. But I don't see this mass migration, because I'm not quite sure how the Haitians, while Haiti is falling apart once again, are going to have the dollars or the technology to actually get here. Some people asked, because Haiti, of course, shares the island with the Dominican Republic, do you see Haitians trying to aggressively get into the Dominican? First of all, it's not an easy part of the island to traverse. And secondly, the Dominican is already sending people back. So I'm less worried about it. The only way I could see mass numbers, not some, but mass numbers coming to the United States is if there are groups in the United States facilitating it, which I would consider to be an act of treason. You tell me that these people are economic refugees. They can't go back home. There's no place to go to. Well, I would ask what the Clinton Foundation has done to actually help these people. Remember, they raised all that money? Nothing. And then we should accept the idea that until the Haitians want something better, what will they get? It isn't that I don't want it for them. Of course I would want it for them. Haiti has been a problem for 30, 40 years. And those of you who might be older, you could even argue longer. When do the Haitians say enough? They don't know how. They won't. It's awful. You won't get an argument from me. Have we put money in? We've put a crap ton of money in. Have we seen a result? No. I am not sure how to solve Haiti's problem. But that doesn't make it the United States' problem in terms of unfettered access to the country. I think that's a logical thing to say. And I think that's what's being said at the kitchen tables and the bar stools across America. I'm Tony Katz.
President commit a crime? Is it your testimony today?
Yes.
And what crime have you witnessed?
How much time do I have to go through it?
It is simple. You name the crime. Did you watch him steal something?
Corruption statutes, RICO and conspiracy.
What is the crime, sir?
You asked me to answer the question. I answered the question.
No.
RICO, you're obviously not familiar with. Corruption.
Excuse me, sir. Excuse me, sir. RICO is not a crime. It is a category. What is
it's
the
category
crime?
Of crimes that you're then charged
you
under
have charges.
A long hundred
you have charges. Sir, please
want me to name the exact statute
sir,
under RICO?
Yes.
Well, it's funny. In this committee room, everyone's not here. There's over 18
all right, sir, I reclaim my
lawyers
time.
That
I
went to law school.
Time. I
I'll
reclaim
leave it
my
up
time.
To you guys
hey,
to
thank
define
you, sir.
The
I reclaim my time.
Thank goodness she has reclaimed her time. That was the Hunter Biden probe yesterday. That was Tony Bobulinski, Hunter Biden's former business partner, speaking. And it was Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez kind of losing her head. A lot of people want to talk about meltdown. I don't know. I think that's just exactly who she is. Not interested in data, but interested in the parameters of the progressive narrative. Now, sadly, you can argue that about everybody these days, and that's what sucks. It makes having a conversation outrageously difficult. But to hear her talk about RICO is not a crime, RICO is a category. She's talking about racketeering. The Trump team is like, yeah, we'd like to have a word about this. We would like to discuss this. Tony Katz. Tony Katz today, what's going on? You understand that when Representative Ocasio-Cortez goes down this line, there is nothing that would have satisfied. These hearings are nonsense. Because no one is interested in data. No one is interested in what is happening. And pick the subject. They are interested in whatever ideology beats the other guy. The end. I have for a long time been discussing the fact that Representative Ocasio-Cortez is childlike. Her policies are childlike. And over the past few months, she is childlike. The tone of voice, the attitude, the inability to be rational, it is all tantrum all the time. All tantrum every step of the way. Is it not possible that Joe Biden, Hunter Biden did something wrong? You may not like it because ideologically it hurts, but just based on data, do I think an impeachment is coming? I had actually hoped for it. I don't see it. But I will tell you that my hope for it was predicated on having the investigation. And what have you heard me say a million times? Don't move until you see it. Do not make a move until you have it. Do not. Do anything until you've got it down cold. But definitely have the hearings and let people know what's what. Impeachment is a political maneuver. And just because you don't have it doesn't mean the data, the information that is put out there doesn't actually get connected to other people. Meaning that they pick it up and they realize that Hunter's a shady dude. And you take a look at the response, whether it be from Representative Dan Goldman of New York or Representative Ocasio-Cortez, you take a look at how they act and you're like, wow, Republicans must be onto something. And you say to me, well, Tony, that's some rank politics. Yes, 100%. 100%. Wouldn't it be better if we actually discussed what was happening? But if they're not going to discuss it, we at least have to do our part to make sure America knows here's what we're seeing. And then when you see the response, they'll make up their own mind. I think Ocasio-Cortez did great damage to Joe Biden yesterday with her flailing about. It was also hilarious. This is Tony Katz today. So I'm trying to get caught up on this lawsuit, the Justice Department, and 17 states are now suing Apple because they're alleging that Apple exploits its monopoly. All right. Where are the lawyers? Let's figure this out. Tony Katz, Tony Katz today, 833-468-8669, 833-GOT-TONY. Find everything at TonyKatz.com. So I'm looking at the reporting from the Wall Street Journal. So you've got the Justice Department saying that Apple blocks software developers and gaming companies from offering better options. So it's an antitrust complaint. It was filed in a New Jersey federal court. I assume there's a reason for that. There's something about being in New Jersey that makes it better for them. They say that Apple uses control of the iPhone to prevent competitors from offering innovative services. So Wall Street Journal discusses digital wallets, for example, that Apple will limit the functionality of hardware products that compete with Apple's own devices. The suit says Apple makes it difficult for users to switch to devices that don't use Apple's operating system like Android. According to Merrick Garland, Apple, quote, has maintained its power not because of its superiority, but because of its unlawful, exclusionary behavior. Oh, that's a that's a line. That is a statement right there. Because I mean, it's meant to attack them where they live and breathe. This is part of the press conference that Merrick Garland, the Attorney General, had earlier.
Okay. Earlier today, the Department of Justice, joined by 15 states and the District of Columbia, sued Apple in the U.S. District Court for the District of New Jersey for violating Section 2 of the Sherman Antitrust Act. Over the last two decades, Apple has become one of the most valuable public companies in the world. Today, its net income exceeds the individual gross domestic product of more than 100 countries. That is in large part due to the success of the iPhone, Apple's signature smartphone product. For over a decade, iPhone sales have made up a majority of Apple's annual revenue. Today, Apple's share of the U.S. performance smartphone market exceeds 70%.
So is that the problem? If they were smaller, it'd be better. If they weren't successful, it'd be better. I'm always, every time I hear something like this, I admit, I get the shakes. And because it's like, all right, the government thinks you're too big. They're going after you. The government never thinks they're too big. They always think you're too big. And then you get into the conversation of what if that's the case? What if there was only one? What if the only thing you had was an iPhone? And they control every aspect of it, right? They have a very walled-off sandbox, as one could put it, and you didn't have a say. Well, I don't have to have an iPhone. I don't have to have a smartphone. Isn't that the response? And it seems that the response back is, oh, don't be silly. I have an iPhone. I have it right next to me. It's very attractive. It looks just like yours. The reason I have one is because the job that I have, I create content, video and audio, and it allows me to do that. Connection to social media, that's part of the gig. I have, on many an occasion, thought, what if I said, I don't want to be a part of this crazy anymore? And what if I said to the smartphone people and to the social media people,
F these people.
I'm out. I'm gone. I'm done. I don't need any part of this anymore. Thank you, Cleveland. Good night. I get to decide. Do you really think I need to watch one more nonsense bullcrap video on Facebook? You think I need to watch one more video of some not-so-attractive girl dancing? By the way, there are so many of those. It's super weird. Everybody's doing a dance. The guys are doing a dance. This one's Meemaw's doing a dance. Good Lord, none of you can actually dance. None of you have any talent whatsoever. But as we have learned from social media, talent is meaningless. Everybody is a star, and there are people who are only online who have bigger audiences than I do being a radio host. Don't deny reality. But I can walk away from the thing. So what is the issue here? If I can walk away, you can walk away, people can walk away. What is Apple's practices? How do they affect anything?
And its share of the entire U.S. smartphone market exceeds 65%. Apple charges as much as nearly $1,600 for an iPhone. But as our complaint alleges, Apple has maintained monopoly power in the smartphone market not simply by staying ahead of the competition on the merits, but by violating federal antitrust law.
Wait a second. What do I care what they charge? If they charge $300, it would be okay? They're not charging $5,000. They charge what the market will bear. What's the argument here? Again, I find myself getting the shakes listening to these people.
Consumers should not have to pay higher prices because companies break the law. We allege that Apple has employed a strategy that relies on exclusionary, anti-competitive conduct that hurts both consumers and developers. For consumers, that has meant fewer choices, higher prices and fees, lower quality smartphones, apps and accessories, and less innovation from Apple and its competitors. For developers, that has meant being forced to play by rules that insulate Apple from competition.
Now, I must say I liked this part because this is Merrick Garland and therefore the Biden administration admitting how important competition is, which would be capitalism, which can we get something? Can we get a hand? Thank you. Thank you, Producer Carl. Appreciate that. Good on you. I think Americans do wrestle with the idea of whether or not it would be okay for a company like Apple or any company to tell those who work within that space, no, you can't do this, or if you build that, we build something like it, so therefore we'll throttle you down. We would never accept that when it comes to internet access. Company X provides internet access, but I want to access this movie channel through that internet access, but that internet access also offers a movie channel, so they throttle down the movie channel I want to see, so my movie buffers, lags, etc. No, we don't accept those things, and really that isn't what you see from the internet providers, because, well, they want to provide internet so they get paid for providing internet. It's a little counterintuitive to say we're going to stop those people. But one could argue Apple does this and Apple does that and Apple shouldn't. Be a more open platform. And the argument is you have massive share of the market. A market, by the way, that you created. And if you're not going to be more open, that does indeed bring about less choices. And that, of course, means more cost. That's the argument that we hear Merrick Garland is making. Is it a legitimate one? Is it one that we would look at and say, yes, this is a problem? Especially when Merrick Garland is stating that Apple has, quote, maintained its power, not because of its superiority, but because of its unlawful exclusionary behavior. I am not, I am not a fan of Android. I'm just not. I don't like the way it presents itself. If I had my druthers, and I would give anything for BlackBerry to bring back a BlackBerry operating system, give me a tactile keyboard, I'd be the happiest guy in the world. Oh, a tactile keyboard. Clickety click click click. Real buttons. Not some nonsense haptic sound, but real buttons. Can I tell you, like I'm holding on to my iPhone right now, like I'm going to text. All right, let's say I was going to text producer Carl. And there, I just spelled Carl wrong because I went for the R and I got the T. Do you know how often I do that? Do you know how often I'm trying to type something and it's like, never mind the autocorrect. That's wrong, that's wrong, that's wrong. I suffer from a condition, ladies and gentlemen, that sadly not enough people talk about. Hi, I'm Tony Katz, and too many Americans have fat thumbs, or FTD, fat thumb disorder. Fat thumb disorder is not to be laughed at. It is a serious medical condition that keeps millions of Americans from properly typing on their smartphone. As a matter of fact, the amount of time they waste retyping, whether it be a love note or a message or simply some off-color joke, costs them minutes a day. And those minutes could be minutes spent with loved ones. FTD is a serious disorder because those who make the smartphones don't care about those with fat thumb disorder. Making phones ever smaller or ever larger, but still keeping the keyboard as some kind of nonsense size that makes no sense and needs calibration every 30 seconds. Won't you give now to those who suffer from FTD and give those fat thumb weirdos a chance? I'm Tony Katz. I can't type. It drives me crazy. So I would give anything for a tactile keyboard. Near anything, I guess I should argue that. But I don't know if I look at Apple and I say, bad guy. And I don't know if I want the federal government doing this. Apple has stated they're going to defend themselves quite vigorously. Quote, this lawsuit threatens who we are and the principles that set Apple products apart in fiercely competitive markets. If successful, it would hinder our ability to create the kind of technology people expect from Apple, where hardware, software, and services intersect. So there's been, you know, antitrust legislation coming out or lawsuits coming out. U.S. has filed anti-monopoly lawsuits against Amazon and Google and Meta. And so I am forced to ask myself if there is indeed a purpose here beyond protecting Americans. It's Merrick Garland. You want me to trust? You want me to trust on any level, Merrick Garland? That is not happening. I am not about to trust this guy. And you know I'm right. Trust Merrick Garland. No, 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 no. That is hilarious. You go after all these groups. I got to wonder what really is happening here. But this is all that came out today. There's going to be a lot to break down, a lot to understand. We'll see how the stock works and whether or not people care. Because that's always a big part of these things. Keep it here. I'm Tony Katz. This is Tony Katz Today.
never hurt someone before the night is through.
Somebody's change is not going to take place from there on down. Change is going to take place from the grassroots on up.
That's right.
And we need to mobilize millions of people to demand that every American has decent and affordable housing, and at the same time, we address the existential crisis of climate change. And that is what this legislation does.
He's standing in front of a sign, as Bernie Sanders, that says Green New Deal for public housing. In case you didn't know how far these people could go, there it is. There it is. Tony Katz. Tony Katz today. What's going on, everybody? 833-468-8669. 833-GOT-TONY. You know, every day with these people, something else. I don't even know what this so-called legislation is. But when they talk about housing as a human right, I must tell you how relieved I am to hear that. Because I also believe that every single human being should have a 4-bedroom, 3.5-bath, 3,700 square foot house with a swimming pool. And I'm sorry. What was that, Producer Carl? It won't come with a swimming pool. Oh gosh. No, I don't know how I feel about it. All right, but a nice 4-bedroom, 3.5-bath, 3,700 square foot. Okay, I'm sorry, Producer Carl. Again. It won't have 4-bedroom, okay, a 3-bedroom, a 1-bedroom with a shared bathroom with 4 other people in the same, house, the same 3,700 square, the same 750 square feet. Wait a second, that is not acceptable. I don't want this. Does anybody ever ask Bernie Sanders or Ocasio-Cortez, who's standing right next to him, or Jamal Bowman, 3 useful idiots, 2.5 of them real bigots when it comes to Israel? What kind of house? What kind of public housing? Who decides? Because if you decide, well, this is going to suck for the rest of us. But then again, they don't care what we think. They think we should just, you know, be thankful for what we're given. I'll stick with capitalism. This is Tony Katz today.